Prescription drugs have a purpose. They're created to heal the sick and comfort those in pain. But when used improperly, they become dangerous things that can cause sickness, pain, and even death. Prescription drug abuse isn't a problem in our region, state, or nation. It's more of an epidemic that fuels addiction, overdoses, crime, and even a resurgence of illicit drugs, specifically heroin. The problem has gotten so bad in Wisconsin that the state commissioned a work group full of experts from fields including medicine, addiction treatment, and law enforcement. Now the report is out. The recommendations have been made, but the question is, with fiscal budgets strained, will the recommendations go on the shelf, or will they be put into action? We'll talk about it with two of those work group members this hour on the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'd like to welcome my guests this hour. First, I'll introduce Twyla Johnson. She is Pharmacy Services Director for Security Health Plan in Wausau. Twyla, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. And next, I'll introduce Dr. Mike Miller. Dr. Miller is an addiction psychiatrist and medical director of the Harrington Recovery Center at Rogers Memorial Hospital in Oconomowoc. Dr. Miller, thank you so much for joining us as well.
Absolutely. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And listeners, I want you to take part of the program, too, by calling in and sharing your stories, your comments, and your questions. Have you found yourself becoming dependent on prescription drugs? Have you seen loved ones or friends fall into the vice of prescription drug abuse? Or do you have your own suggestions on how to fight back against it? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. And Dr. Miller, I'd like to start with you. This work group was formed to respond to a problem. What kind of evidence was there that prescription drug abuse was a big enough problem to warrant this kind of effort in Wisconsin?
Well, the group that began this was the Prevention Committee of the State Council on Alcohol and Other Drug Abuse. And the State Council is one of the many councils that are set up through the governor's office to deal with various issues of interest to the state. And addiction professionals work quite a bit on the council, on its various committees, including the Treatment Intervention Committee. And it's just very clear to people who help folks who have alcohol and drug problems that there's been a change. Wisconsin has always been a state where alcohol was drug number one, and it still is the case that many people present to addiction treatment for alcohol problems. But the percentage, but the number of people presenting asking for help for an opioid problem was going up significantly. And there's all sorts of evidence regarding national statistics about the number of people that show up in emergency rooms with overdoses related to prescription drugs. It's not that it was that hard to understand this as a problem. On a national level, the National Survey on Drug Use and Health has shown steady increases in rates of what's called non-medical drug use, where prescription drugs are used in ways differently than the doctor originally intended it. So it's a national epidemic that has been of the attention not just of agencies such as the National Institute on Drug Abuse, but the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, and now the CDC, looking at this from a public health standpoint as a public health crisis and an epidemic that needs to be addressed. And finally, of course, the Drug Czar's office, its official name is the White House Office on National Drug Policy, has written a very fine report on the prescription drug problem in the country and is trying to coordinate all federal efforts addressing this. And it meets any definition of an epidemic. The rates of increase have been dramatic since 1990 and even further since 2000. And it's affecting every Wisconsin community, and that's why the State Council said, let's get the best report written we can to look at the extent of the problem in Wisconsin, but more specifically at solutions.
Now, Twyla Johnson, before we get into the report itself and you know the meat of the subject here, Dr. Miller mentioned opioid, and what kind of prescriptions are being abused? Are there some more popular than others, and what is an opioid?
There are three main classes of drugs that we see the most abuse of. The opioids, which are the narcotic pain relievers that you may have heard of, OxyContin, hydrocodone, Vicodin, those types of medications. Then we have the CNS depressants, and those are commonly known as nerve pills. They are benzodiazepines. You might have heard of them as Ativan or Valium.
Okay.
And then the third class are the stimulants, and this is very common in youth and adolescents, the Adderalls and the Ritalins, the drugs that are used to treat ADHD.
Right, and we hear a lot about those drugs in particular with college students that are trying to cram, you know, for exams or something like that, don't we?
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what are the dangers of prescription drug abuse for the individual, first off, and then we'll get into the community, Twyla Johnson?
The dangers of abuse, in particular the opioids, so those are the ones that we focus on most often. They definitely have a place in therapy for treating pain, but the addictive potential is very high. And as people become more and more dependent on them, they take larger and larger doses, and then you can see the side effects start to manifest themselves, which can be respiratory depression and other kinds of things. And also, people mix them with other drugs, and most commonly, when someone has an adverse effect, it's usually respiratory. They stop breathing.
Dr. Miller, how hard is it, or how easy is it, I guess, first of all, to get addicted to something like an OxyContin or a hydrocodone?
Well, there's actually a little bit of controversy about how easy is it to get addicted. We really understand now that addiction is a brain disease that really isn't about drugs, but it's about people's brains. People who have addiction have it, and people who don't have addiction, there's actually some controversy about whether they can get it or acquire it. There's at least a 60% of the probability of whether you have addiction or not depends on your genetics. And addiction is a complex brain disease which manifests itself in a variety of behaviors, including difficulty controlling the amount of alcohol or drug that you use, being preoccupied through the day with thinking about it, and you just can't get it off your mind. It becomes your central focus. You shift your motivation around so that this becomes the central thing in your life and bumps out work and family and church and everything else. And so addiction does happen in related to alcohol, sedatives, stimulants, opioids, cannabinoids like marijuana. There's a variety of classes of drugs where addiction can manifest itself. And roughly 10% of the public has addiction. The general rates of opioid addiction, and I think that's the main focus of our discussion today, are actually less. They're probably in the range of 3 to 4% of the public. And one takeaway message from this is that, you know, over 80% of the public, by any estimate, does not have addiction. And opioid addiction actually only happens to about 5% of the public, so 95% of the people don't have it. And so opioid use can be safe and certainly is very effective for pain conditions in most patients. But there is a group of patients, and they know they're different by their relationship with opioids. And when they find that they, instead of feeling sleepy or maybe kind of sick or a little bit off, I mean, most opioids actually don't produce euphoria for the average person. And people get what's called a dysphoric response. They feel kind of unpleasant and off with it. But if somebody is taking an opioid and notices that it's really a powerful, positive emotional experience, then they are at risk of having addiction, and they need to be very careful about the opioids that they take. So, again, the topic of addiction is a complex one that could consume our whole hour. But the issue there is that it's about your brain and how you respond to opioids when you take them. And it's that dysfunctional response that leads to all the behavior problems that we see in addiction.
And for our listeners, we're talking about prescription drug abuse in Wisconsin and a report that has been released by a work group that is It's efforting a response to the problem. It was released in January, and now we're going to see, I guess, in the near future, what happens with that, whether the recommendations are instituted or whether they end up going on the shelf for budget reasons or whatever reasons. You listeners can call in with any questions or comments they have for either of our guests, and if you have a story to share and you're willing to share it, we'd love to hear it. The number is 1-800-228-5615. That number, again, is 1-800-228-5615. And Twyla Johnson, what about the community effects? Dr. Miller mentioned that this happens everywhere, that this abuse is all around us to certain varying degrees. What kind of negative effects does it have on a community?
Well, this type of drug misuse and abuse, it isn't in any particular segment of the population. It's seen everywhere. So as utilization increases, and we're particularly concerned with youth because that's where it starts, as these drugs become more popular, you see more crime, more drug-related crime.
Like what?
Like, theft. Actually, people breaking into other people's homes and stealing their medications, but you also see more more people dealing drugs illicitly. Mm-hmm. And then one thing that we will probably talk about later in the program is where heroin fits into that.
Right. That is, it's really startling, I think, that heroin is not only popping up, you know, in Madison and Milwaukee, where you might think that it is, you know, where it's a bigger city, you would almost understand that, but it's happening in places like Marinette, there was a heroin den busted in Eau Claire not more than a year ago. So we will get into that in just a bit. Dr. Miller, are Oxycontin and hydrocodone, are they replacing marijuana as the new gateway drug?
Well, actually, thank you for bringing that up. Nicotine is the gateway drug for everybody. It's the drug that most people, the addictive drug that most people use first. And the legal drugs are not talked about as much as they should, alcohol and nicotine, because they really have the greatest health effects of any of the drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But of the illegal drugs, prescription opioids have now exceeded marijuana as the first illegal drug that youth use on a national statistical basis. So it is the thing the kids can get to. They're readily available in any middle school or high school. Kids can find them in a very short period of time. There's no issue with access whatsoever. And a national report by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention shows that people in rural counties are nearly twice as likely to end up with overdoses on prescription painkillers as people in big cities. The biggest concentrations of prescription opioid diversion and overdose deaths actually are in Appalachia, in southwestern Virginia, and in West Virginia, and in eastern Kentucky is possibly ground zero. But Wisconsin is not Appalachia, but Wisconsin has rural areas. And if people think that being outside of the big city provides any distance or safety or comfort, that is a false belief, because addiction does happen very commonly in rural areas, and prescription drug diversion is big in all Wisconsin counties.
Are there any theories as to why it might be, you know, so popular in rural areas? Is it because the other drugs might not be available, or any guesses on that?
I don't know what guesses there are on that. I mean, we have a lot of belief systems in our culture,
mm-hmm.
that are comfortable for us. For the majority culture to believe that something only happens to the minority culture is comforting. And most people believe that alcohol and drug problems are concentrated in the inner city and in people of color. And that is just absolutely not true. The rates of addiction to alcohol and other drugs, including these prescription drugs, are higher in whites than in blacks by far.
Hmm.
And so it's certainly the case that these medicines are available everywhere. What we're going to talk about at some point in tonight's conversation is that the source for these drugs is not drug dealers. The source for these drugs is not somebody in a car driving by who's not from town, who's driven in with a supply. The source for prescription drugs is the home, and it's prescription drug supplies that are left over from a legitimate medical prescription where the doctor has written it for a family member, and the leftovers are kept in the house, not locked up. And that's the source of these drugs for what kids are doing throughout Wisconsin and throughout the nation.
Now, kind of bouncing off the aspect of culture here, Twyla Johnson, what about the – there's a lot of perceptions that, well, these are prescription drugs. These are created, you know, by companies. They're regulated by the FDA. Is that a myth that is actually adding to the problem of prescription drug abuse?
You're absolutely right. There is a low perception of risk because they're prescriptions. They're written by physicians. They are assumed by people to be safe. And that is true when they're taking when they're taken for the person they're prescribed and taken as directed. But the low perception of risk, as well as the sheer volume and prevalence of these products, is really what is contributing to the problem.
And again, listeners, we're talking about prescription drug abuse in Wisconsin and what can be done or what should be done to fight back and to get it under control. The number is 800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. We'll hear more from Dr. Mike Miller and Pharmacy Services Director Twyla Johnson when we come back, and we will take some of your calls, hopefully. This is The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us. Prescription drug abuse is reaching epidemic levels among people in Wisconsin and the nation as a whole, and it's not just targeting young people. It's everyone. It's young and old. And it's creating a lot of problems for law enforcement, the healthcare industry, and the addicted themselves. We're talking this hour about a report released earlier this year that offers recommendations for the state to fight back. And we're going to be working our way through some of those recommendations before we get into the bigger issue of whether the recommendations will be put into action or whether they'll go on the shelf for budgetary reasons or whatever. I'm joined by Pharmacy Services Director for Security Health Plan, Twyla Johnson, and Addiction Psychiatrist and Medical Director of the Harrington Recovery Center in Oconomowoc, Dr. Mike Miller. And I'd like to hear from you, the listener. What do you think the state should do, or what should we as individuals do to curb prescription drug abuse? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. And Twyla Johnson, I'd like to go back to you. The work group first met in 2010, and since then I collected some data from the State Crime Lab that shows the overall number of cases involving hydrocodone and OxyContin in western Wisconsin, at least, have gone down a bit. Does that mean that prescription drug abuse is abating?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't mean that at all. OxyContin, for a long time, was the drug of choice. It's an extended release form of oxycodone, and very expensive, and easily crushed and snorted, which was the method of choice for people who were abusing it. It was reformulated a few years ago and unable to be abused in that way. So utilization of that has gone down a little bit. Generic oxycodone and some other products have increased dramatically. But there's also an increased use of heroin, which produces similar effects and is actually much cheaper as far as cost on the street.
And Dr. Mike Miller, I mean, have you been noticing, at least in your practice, more people coming in saying that, well, they're using heroin because they got started with an opioid painkiller?
Absolutely, yes. The way it works is that primarily kids or young adults will get painkillers from the medicine cabinet. And back when OxyContin got all of the press, the actual number one drug being misused in this way was actually Vicodin. The reason Vicodin was misused more is because it's prescribed so much more often because it's a Schedule III product and more convenient for doctors to prescribe because it can have refills. You don't have to have a handwritten prescription. You can call it into the pharmacy. So it was easier for doctors to authorize Vicodin prescriptions. There were more of them. There was more in medicine cabinets, and that's the drug the kids were using. Now, OxyContin was developed only for one purpose, and that was so that cancer patients or patients near the end of life who needed to take very large doses of opioids because of severe pain could get all of it in one convenient pill they would swallow instead of taking a handful of pills to control their pain. It was not intended for acute pain. It was not intended for a wrenched knee or a bad back. It was intended to be one formulation with lots of medicine in one capsule. So the reason it became popular among people with addiction who had developed tolerance over time and needed to have a high dose was, again, it was convenient for them to just snort one OxyContin instead of snorting 12 5-milligram tablets of oxycodone. But indeed, heroin is much cheaper, and so heroin is not as available in every community as pills are. But once people get into the pattern of heavy opioid use and develop physical dependence, withdrawal when they stop, they have intense craving and preoccupation, the cost of pills that they have to buy from somebody who generally got them from medicine cabinets, but the cost goes up and heroin becomes cheaper. And so it is a very sad situation that the progression goes from pills swallowed to pills snorted to either pills injected or heroin snorted for cost reasons. And it ends up in the final point of this, which is IV heroin addiction. And that's the one that's been around for a long time, but not in every community, not in every demographic. And now IV heroin has just gotten to be so common, whereas it used to be more of the classic cliche of the inner city minority population using it. So heroin's big everywhere in Wisconsin now.
Yeah, and that's, talk about tragic. There have been stories, I know down in Madison, fellow reporters of mine down there have been hearing about people passing out at the wheel because they get their drugs, they shoot it up, and then they're driving home or wherever and fall asleep at the wheel, drive off the road, and cause accidents. It's really scary. So let's talk about the report itself here, and I'll stay with you, Dr. Miller. Prevention seems to be, I mean, the report did stress that there is no one, you know, this isn't in an order of importance, but one of the big things that was stressed is prevention, and specifically through outreach and education. What is the major form that this would take if you know, you had control and could tell the state what to do? I mean, community coalitions was one option. What is the key here for prevention?
Was that for me?
Oh, yeah, Dr. Miller.
I'll be happy to field it. Yes, I'm sorry. I'm glad we're shifting the focus now from the extent of the problem to the solutions.
Right.
The solutions do need to be very multifaceted.
Mm-hmm.
One solution is to get doctors to do a better job of writing prescriptions in appropriate amounts and not really providing excessive supplies when they're not needed. The other is to look at safe drug storage in the homes and educate the public about locking up your meds. And I want to get back to that after we kind of have this overview of the different solutions.
And the education for those prescribing the pills in the would that be through a law change or some kind of a regulation, or is that up to the state to decide?
Oh no, there could be regulatory changes. In fact, the Wisconsin Medical Society at its House of Delegates in April of this year passed a resolution calling for medical licenses to be linked to a requirement for education regarding drug addiction and safe prescribing practices, because doctors could improve their prescribing practices. And evidence shows that doctors need education about not only the problem but about solutions. And one of the solutions is for doctors to simply talk to their patients at the point of writing a prescription for opioids, saying, this is something that can really help you, but understand it's a dangerous medicine. It can be stolen. People can overdose on it and die, and it can be an issue for your kids. And docs are not doing that universally as providing what I would call informed consent, that we're giving you this medicine, but please understand what we're giving you. It's something that's a double-edged sword, very helpful, but with some real risks, not only for you, but for your loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
So there's safe medication storage. There's safe medication disposal with drop-off sites, and there's community education to parents and grandparents about the problem and about the need to be vigilant with regard to safe storage at home. And so it needs to be tailored to professionals, needs to be tailored to general community members. Law enforcement definitely wants to see solutions because they don't see themselves as being the primary people in this. They realize it's a big problem, and it shouldn't just be dealt with at the end of the line with an arrest. That's not the ideal way to prevent this problem. So it does need a broad response in all Wisconsin communities.
And Twyla Johnson, I heard that you wanted to get into this kind of, you wanted to jump in as well. Did you not?
Yes. I would add to the educational piece. For prescribers, there's more education needed in identifying addictive behavior, as well as the need to educate patients on safe storage and appropriate use of medication. So there's that's kind of a double faceted side to the prescribing. We can't assume that all people are addicts or drug seeking behavior, but most of the drugs enter the system through legitimate means.
Okay, and we do have some callers that are trying to get in. We're having a bit of a technical difficulties. So we're going to go to the phones right now, and I'm not able to, you know, see who this person is or where they're calling from, but we're going to try to get them on the line nonetheless. You're on the air, and what's your question or comment?
Yes, I was talking. My name is Buffy, and I had been addicted to painkillers for many years. I started out having severe migraines, and they would just keep increasing the narcotic use.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like then when you have a problem trying to get off of it, the doctors don't want to deal with you. And it is so frustrating. Right now, there is a medication out there that they can give to people who are in withdrawal from narcotics. And basically, there's no euphoria with it. What it does is it gets rid of the cravings that people have so that you can start to do the other things in your life, you know, whether or not it's talking to a counselor or whatever it is. But the big problem with this medication is the government is only letting doctors have 100 patients that's on this medication, and they have to have some special certification. Hmm. So there's this help out there, and it saved my life. Saved my life. And it's so frustrating to know there's so many other people out there. They need this. It could save their lives, but there's nothing that we can do about it.
All right. Well, Buffy, thank you so much for your story and sharing, and really glad that you were able to get off of these drugs. And Twyla Johnson, are we talking about methadone here, or what?
Oh.
What is? But Buffy, go ahead.
It's Suboxone.
Okay. All right. Twyla Johnson, could you tell us a little bit about this drug?
Suboxone is a combination drug that is used to help people withdraw slowly from prescription opioids, and it provides a relief from the withdrawal symptoms without the euphoria. So you don't get the high from the drugs, but you don't get the withdrawal symptoms either. So it helps reduce the cravings and lets people slowly wean themselves off.
And Dr. Miller, could this just turn into a substitute addiction or not?
Now, that was a great question. We didn't plan this to go through a script of what the questions would be, but that's a great one, because for all of the opioid maintenance medications, methadone, a medication called LAM, which is not currently available, and for Suboxone, there's a common belief that if you maintain a person on an opioid, and Suboxone is an opioid, it's a very unique opioid, and methadone is, but if you maintain somebody on an opioid, you're substituting one addiction for another, and that is absolutely false. What you're substituting is one physical dependency for another. You're substituting one medicine, one agent for another. But when someone is under a good treatment plan with either methadone maintenance or even more precisely Suboxone maintenance, they don't have preoccupation, they don't have craving, They're not using despite adverse consequences. They're not breaking the law to get money to support their drug use. They're functional in their job. They're functional in their family. They don't have the features of addiction. They don't have the drug hunger. And so the medicine actually does treat addiction. It resolves preoccupation. It resolves craving. And so to say that it creates addiction is absolutely not the case. Now, it gets to be a little bit more subtle if someone takes Suboxone episodically rather than in a maintenance basis. They actually can get high off it, and there is some diversion and misuse of Suboxone. But by and large, it's a medicine that is much preferable to alternatives. It is what's called a partial opioid, which means that it can't turn on the opioid receptors completely, and you actually can't overdose on it if that's all you're taking. If you're mixing it with another opioid or mixing it with a benzodiazepine like Xanax or Ativan, you could have a problem. But it really protects itself from overdose by having what's called a mixed agonist-antagonist pharmacologic feature to it. So it's an amazing medicine, and Buffy is right that any doctor can treat an infinite number of patients with pain meds, but they can only treat a limited number of patients with addiction with Suboxone. There's certainly some ironies there that are problematic.
Go ahead.
So yes, you do need special training. Yes, you do need special regulation. But what's being discussed nationally is, should you require special training, not just for providing the therapeutic agents, methadone and Suboxone, but should there be required training for prescribing the drugs that get people into trouble in the first place, which is the hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, et cetera. So there's a lot of issues here for public policy, and there's not an agreement yet on whether there should be mandatory prescriber education for painkillers as there is required prescriber education for Suboxone.
Twyla Johnson, would you like to jump in on this? I mean, a question I'd have for you is there are trade organizations like the AMA and would they fight against, could you see any kind of a pushback by industry people that are making money off of these painkillers to try to regulate who gets what or how many pain pills you give out or whether you can give out more of this this medicine that helps?
Well, in my opinion, the pharmaceutical companies are there to make money, but not indiscriminately. So I think that it's in everyone's best interest to see the medications used appropriately and in the appropriate populations and to have the supply be sufficient to meet those needs.
All right. And then we're going to get into a little bit more about the report, but we do have another caller on the line. And again, not able to preview who the person is, but you're on the air. And what's your comment or question for our guests?
Hi, my name is Josh. I'm a RN in a small rural clinic in Wisconsin. And a fascinating topic this afternoon, one that really strikes close to home. For myself and my coworkers in our clinic, our medical director, along with the rest of our staff, are very, very proactive on trying to prevent and also help those in our community who do have addiction problems and drug-seeking issues with prescription medications. One thing I had a question about. Two things. The first thing would be, where are we at with our state database in Wisconsin, prescription
database. Drug monitoring program?
A big part of what I do, well, some part of what I do during the course of an average day would be some detective work. If we get a patient in, perhaps a new patient, who would like a controlled substance, I may check with some of the local pharmacies to see where they're at with recent prescriptions. And it's amazing the things that we find sometimes with sometimes little old grandma or grandpa who you really wouldn't suspect has been doctor shopping all over and getting numerous controlled substances, and sometimes they're going to the patient, sometimes they're being diverted. And I just like to know where we're at with that. Second issue concerns tramadol, and if there's anything in the works for getting that more tightly controlled. I know it's not a controlled substance as far as opioid, more like a pseudo-opioid, almost like a cousin of venlafaxine, but mm-hmm. It leads, we find that it is highly, I don't know if I call it addictive, but it's a terrible gateway for many of our patients into narcotics. They become dependent.
Twyla, do you want to talk about the PDMP and I can talk about tramadol?
Yeah, let's do that. Twyla, it was a recommendation by the work group, the PDMP, but it isn't actually part of this study. It's something that was going on separately, I believe. Is that correct? And where do we stand with the prescription drug monitoring?
That's correct. The Pharmacy Examining Board has been charged with the development of the prescription drug monitoring program for Wisconsin, and they are actively working on all the parameters of that and implementing it. It's scheduled to be implemented by the first of next year.
Okay. And there was a funding issue, right? But I believe that there was a federal grant that was obtained to help get this thing going?
Yes. Yes, there were. Mm-hmm.
And the
implementation of something like that's very complex because you want to take into account all the privacy issues and who should have access and, mm-hmm. and who shouldn't and under what circumstances. So the state spent a lot of time looking at other states and their successful PDMPs in making sure that Wisconsin's needs were met.
And I believe that, according to the report anyway, that there were, at the time that this report was released, 34 other states that have already implemented PDMPs, and they seem to be successful?
That's right. They are varying degrees of success. The PDMP implementation is just one facet of it. The other thing is to make it easy enough for physicians and pharmacists to access so that it's usable.
Okay. And Dr. Miller, tell us about tramadol.
Well, tramadol is a wonderful example of the comment I made before that addiction is not about drugs, it's about brains. It's not even a controlled substance, as the caller said. And in pharmacology studies, it has 1/10,000th the action of morphine at the morphine receptor. So people said, it treats pain, but it's not that strong. It's like almost nothing at the morphine receptor. Well, that just goes to show that the brain is a lot more complex than we understand because people develop addiction to tramadol.
Hmm.
What people develop addiction to tramadol? People with addiction develop addiction to tramadol.
Okay.
People without addiction can take tramadol just fine, and they never lose control. But if you are a person whose brain is set up to have addiction, you will develop loss of control and preoccupation with any of a number of things that you use that you use on a regular basis, and you trigger the reward centers of the brain and recruit the motivation and memory centers of the brain to get involved with this whole complex disease of addiction.
Wow.
So tramadol addiction, I was involved in some of the original work with Dr. Ted Cicero down in St. Louis, who collected basically anecdotal evidence from around the country and published an article of all the people who had written him stories about how, yes, people do lose control with tramadol, and it's health professionals and it's regular patients who have an addiction potential, and then they expose themselves to this medicine, which is wonderfully safe for people without addiction, but is addictive for people with addiction.
Fascinating. Josh, thanks so much for the call. And for all the other listeners out there that might be just champing at the bit to get in on the conversation, the number is 1-800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. We're talking about prescription drug abuse in Wisconsin and a report that's been released by a work group that's took a lot of time and had a lot of experts putting ideas into this thing to come up with solid recommendations to fight back against addiction with prescription drugs and just the problems that go along with that. We're talking with Dr. Mike Miller and Pharmacy Services Director Twyla Johnson. And we will have more conversation on this after our break. You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for tuning in. We're talking about prescription drug abuse in Wisconsin and our region. And in fact, it's everywhere, and it's creating a lot of problems, not just for law enforcement, but for those people involved in the for those people that are addicted to the painkillers, whether or the stimulants, what have you. And we're talking this hour with two experts in the field that are part of a work group that was recently disbanded. And the work group was charged with coming up with recommendations on how to solve the problem. And those two guests are Twyla Johnson. She's a pharmacy services director for Security Health Plan, and Dr. Mike Miller. He is an addiction psychologist, and hopefully we didn't lose him. Dr. Miller, are you still there?
You did lose me, and I'm back.
All right. Well, thanks so much for that. I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the other, you know, parts of this report, and then we're getting close to the top of the hour, so we will eventually talk about, you know, what we expect to get out of this and whether or not all these wonderful recommendations will be implemented. I'm interested in some more of the regulation kind of recommendations. One of them is, calling for more investigations into pill mills. And Dr. Miller, I'll start with you. How would that happen?
Well, I think the prescription drug monitoring program will be the best way to get data readily. Right now, the best information you have is just word of mouth on the street. People that want to get access know where the sources are and where the unscrupulous prescribers are.
Mm-hmm.
But the prescription drug monitoring program will show us where doses are going out, where they're being authorized, who the prescriber is.
And it looks like we lost him again. Twyla Johnson, would you like to follow up on that?
I would add to that. Well, Mike was absolutely on the right track. We just have to be able to identify prescribers better, people who are doctor shopping. The PDMP will really provide a wealth of information without sacrificing privacy, and I think that's what's really needed.
All right. And again, for the listeners, we're talking about prescription drug abuse in Wisconsin and how we can overcome it. And we're having a little bit of a technical difficulty with the phone, or the call-in system. Hopefully, Dr. Miller is able to give us a call back and join in the program again. So we've got a caller on line number 3. We're going to give it a shot. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. What's your name?
Daniel.
Daniel, what's your comment or question?
My question is that how they regulate tobacco industry on the addictiveness of their products. Couldn't they do like something similar like that with the drug industry because of the rise of the addiction that they're having?
Twyla Johnson, there you go. We were talking about how the gateway drugs can include or should include tobacco and alcohol. Any thoughts on that?
Also, another way to fund something like a certain type of program like that, couldn't they just like tax it from the drug industry also? Like say for example to programs or something like that so that people could be more aware of what to do with their products after they're like not using it or something.
All right, thanks for that. Twyla Johnson.
Those are all great ideas and ones that have actually been talked about. Definitely, the pharmaceutical industry bears some responsibility in this whole issue. So there has been discussion about increased tax to help pay for addiction treatment and the like, as well as the pharmaceutical companies do voluntarily contribute to a lot of educational materials and things like that. So expanding on that is a definite possibility. As far as the regulation of the gateway drugs of alcohol and tobacco, I can't really address those, but I will say that among the prescription drugs, there already is a system that helps control more tightly the stronger opioids, the ones that are more addicted, the ones that are more easily diverted. Mike alluded to before, the Vicodin, which is a Sched-3, versus OxyContin, which is a Schedule II, which means it's more tightly controlled. So there is somewhat of a system in place already for that.
And Dr. Miller, I'm hoping that that's you on line two right now.
I don't know if you can hear me or not. Before you couldn't.
I can hear you. Yeah, we
excellent.
The call-in system is kind of acting up, and we will take care of that, definitely. So we were just talking about, Dr. Miller, there was a caller that talked about the tobacco and more regulations on that, or more in a way to fund this whole idea through taxes. And one thing that I thought was interesting, and we'll get right into it, I guess, is every time I have any discussion about anything, cost and budget end up coming up. And Dr. Miller, the way I understood it, the recommendations contained in this report would work out to, you know, a cost of about $1.3 million. Was I reading that correctly?
Well, if I could comment on a variety of things about cost.
Sure.
One is that state employees who worked on this study, recognizing the difficult fiscal situation and political situation in our state, put in a very low fiscal note,
mm-hmm.
Just saying this is all it's going to cost, not so that it wouldn't get shot down politically by having a high fiscal note. The truth is that the solutions are going to come locally. It would be wonderful if there were some state coordination of funding, but the solutions are coming in each county. In Dane County, I'm very proud to say, has been taking the lead. The county executive and the mayor of Madison, Paul Soglin, got together and have funded something through the joint county-city public health department, arranged a big summit on January 30th on opioid addiction, and have gotten a variety of groups together to implement these sorts of recommendations. And I'm on the provider or prescriber subgroup, which met just this week. So some of this implementation is happening on a local level. I think Dane County may be ahead of some other counties. But for funding, a large source of funding is about to happen because of something happening at the federal level called the Risk Evaluation and Mitigation Strategies program at the FDA. And this basically says that if a pharmaceutical company manufactures a medication that carries risks with it, and this can be cancer chemotherapy drugs, it can be anti-epileptic drugs, it can be any sort of medication. If a for-profit manufacturer puts something into the market that carries risk, and everything carries some risk,
mm-hmm.
if there's substantial risk, they are required to file a risk evaluation and mitigation plan, and billions of dollars are going to be placed by the drug companies into funds to pay for education and other issues to mitigate the harms that can come from opioid analgesics that they're selling and profiting from. So that's where I think a lot of the funding is going to come from, is through the drug companies themselves and the federal RIMS initiative.
Well, there's a lot of dedicated funding sources, but the question is, will it be able to be, you know, rated or shuffled around, I guess? Any idea on whether that's being built into this plan?
You sound like you've been around politics for a while and have a bit of cynicism.
I've covered it a bit.
Yes. No, the RIMS dollars aren't government dollars.
Okay.
The RIMS dollars are monies that the drug companies have to contribute and then report to the feds what they've contributed. I don't think the federal government gets its hands on the money ever. It just regulates and keeps track of the pass-through to the end user. So
mm-hmm.
It's not like other funds that have been rated in Wisconsin and elsewhere.
Elsewhere, yes. The federal government, I'm sure every government has faced that. Twyla Johnson, one of the things is alluded to as a possible way to pay for you know, the $1.3 million, whether that's a soft or hard number, was a possible two cent fee added to prescription drugs. Where did that idea come from, and when would that fly?
Well, it depends on who you talk to whether it would fly or not. It was one of the ideas brainstormed as a possible way to raise the revenue in order to pay for some of these initiatives.
Hmm.
It could potentially be tacked on to the average cost of a prescription. It could be billed to the drug manufacturer. There are a variety of possibilities. whether or not it would be effective remains to be seen.
All right, and we are getting very close to the top of the hour, so I'm going to ask you both to throw in, I mean, throw a magic bullet out there if you could. Twyla Johnson, I'll start with you. What would be the best thing, if there's one thing, that we could do as a state, as a society, as a community at the local level or state or national to combat this?
I think we have to realize that it's a problem that has many parts, and the solutions are going to have many parts. And the more we can communicate across lines, the better. And the PDMP, I think, is one of the best places to start.
And Dr. Miller, what's your magic bullet?
I would say PDMP, PDMP, and PDMP. It's a wonderful initiative. I would say that treatment of people who have addiction is an important thing here, because persistent addiction continues the demand for these drugs. And Meritor Hospital, where I worked for many years, and Rogers Hospital, where I'm lucky to work now in Oconomowoc, have drug treatment programs, and there's drug treatment programs throughout the state. But if you look at the study, if you go online, if you just Google SCAODA, if you Google the state council, you'll come to the link right on their page about combating the drug problem, prescription drug problem. And the number one solution is helping our youth be more resilient. And so if we can develop more resiliency in kids and have them have better functioning, psychosocial functioning, to not believe that they need to alter their state through the use of alcohol or drugs of any kind, really working at prevention at the youth level is the focus of this report. And it's a good focus.
Dr. Miller, thank you so much. Twyla Johnson, thank you so much. That's our time. I would like to thank everyone who's helped out with the program, Dorothy Cheney and Team Westside. We'll be back on next week with the first of 9 candidate forums in a row. You're listening to The West Side. Thanks for tuning in.